Usually when we look at a map or say an architectural blueprint, there's this expectation of just absolute precision.
Right, yeah, like engineering.
Exactly like engineering. You look at the grid and you see exactly where the river is, exactly where the train tracks cross, and it's clean.
It's objective.
Yeah.
It's mathematical. And honestly, it's comforting, really, because it strips away all the chaos. We like things to be visible and categorized.
We do, but then, and this is what we're doing today for you listening, then you step off that map and onto the actual terrain, and suddenly that clean sheet of paper, it doesn't help you at all.
Not at all.
Because now you're feeling the violent vibration of the tracks under your feet, the wind is like cutting your face, the noise of the machines is totally deafening. We're looking at a landscape that is, honestly, it's terrifying.
Yeah, the map is completely useless when you're staring into the actual abyss. I mean, it is the absolute definition of losing control.
And that's exactly the tension we're diving into today on this deep dive. We are exploring the space between that safe, distant map and the terrifying reality on the ground. And we're doing it all through the lens of a really remarkable piece of contemporary art from our sources today.
Yes, a very specific piece.
Right? We're looking at a watercolor painted in December 2024. It's by the artist Jairo Duca, and it's titled La Bestia, or The Beast. It's a central piece for his book and series called Trastio. And there is this intense, I mean, almost paradoxical debate in our sources about what this painting is actually doing.
What's fascinating here is how divided the interpretations are.
Yeah.
I mean, on one side, analysts see this painting as a masterclass in macroeconomics, like a very cold structural critique of this massive system. But then on the other side, people are looking at the exact same image and arguing that it's this visceral psychological immersion into deeply personal, like intimate migrant trauma.
Okay, let's unpack this because, I mean, how can one painting be a cold structural critique and an intensely intimate psychological trauma at the exact same time? Are we looking at the machine or are we feeling the heartbeat of the person trapped on it?
Right, and what's incredible is that the answer isn't just in the imagery. It's actually baked into the physics of how the piece was
The
created.
physical materials.
Exactly. But to understand that, I think we need to start with how the debate in our sources frames our standard way of viewing the world. We mentioned that topographical map earlier, right?
Yeah.
Those maps give us a false sense of control. They allow us to view a system, and in this case, the train known as La Bestia, which carries migrants across regions like Mexico. They let us view it as just a network of lines.
Right. From a macro perspective, the train is just a symbol of an implacable macroeconomic and civilizational system. I mean, it's a machine designed to move goods, to move commodities with brutal, just unfeeling efficiency.
And in that massive, brutally efficient system, human lives are, well, they're reduced to mere friction.
Friction, yeah.
When a system is designed to move coal or lumber, a human being climbing onto the roof of a train car is unsanctioned weight. They treat it as surplus, you know, just another byproduct of inequality and displacement. And one side of the debate we are analyzing today argues that Duke's painting is brilliant precisely because it is a cold structural critique of this exact dynamic.
Which our sources argue is achieved by what he deliberately leaves out of the frame, right?
Right. Because the artist completely avoids explicit melodrama. There's no blood in this painting.
Not at all.
There are no contorted faces of pain pushed right up into the foreground. There's no spectacle of the wound, as they say. The argument is that by keeping it technically cold and avoiding the individual's anecdotal pain, the painting successfully indicts a system that is inherently indifferent to human life. It forces you to look at the structure itself.
So it's a tragedy of structure, not a melodrama.
For sure.
I hear that, but I have to push back on the idea that just because there isn't, blood splashing across the canvas, the painting is somehow cold or purely structural. Because think about how we consume the news today.
Okay, how so?
Well, you're sitting on your couch, you're scrolling through your phone, reading statistics about supply chains or border crossings. That is a macro view. That is safe.
You're completely insulated from the physical reality.
Completely insulated, but the experience of looking at this artwork isn't like scrolling on a couch. The experience is like putting down the phone, walking outside, and standing inches away from violently vibrating train tracks.
Wow, yeah.
You can feel the iron shaking. You can feel the wind threatening to pull you under. Just because you aren't actively bleeding doesn't mean you aren't terrified, you know?
That distinction changes everything, really, because if it doesn't feel like you're just looking at a spreadsheet or a map, it means the artist is forcing you out of that safe, structural observer role. And the sources point out that he does this through the actual composition of the piece.
The framing.
Yes. The perspective in La Bestia is incredibly unusual. It's this elevated, pitched perspective. The viewer is positioned as if they are physically hanging off the back of a train car.
Mm-hmm.
You are looking down into the void of the tracks beneath you. You're in a position where you are forced to calculate the deadly risk of a single slip.
Right. You aren't watching the train go by from some grassy field. You are on it. You are hanging off the iron.
You share the muscular tension of the person making that journey. You lose the solid ground beneath your feet. It completely destroys the safe distance of the map reader.
Mm-hmm.
You are now inside the machine.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though, because the visual tension, it isn't just in the angle, it's in the color palette. There is a violent, almost shocking contrast happening in this image.
Oh, absolutely.
In the background, you have this luminous open sky. It's bright, it's clear. But then in the immediate foreground, right where you, the viewer, are hanging, it is this dark, deadly, mechanical peril.
And that contrast isn't just aesthetic, you know, it's deeply psychological. It illustrates the cruel paradox of the American dream.
How so?
Well, you have this horizon that promises clarity, light, hope. But to get there, the immediate path you must walk, or in this case, the machine you must cling to, is absolute terror.
It's the psychological clash between wanting that bright horizon and the paralyzing fear of the dark iron beneath your hands. I can't imagine trying to hold on to both of those realities at the exact same time.
The tension is born right from that intimate collision of hope and survival. And this actually brings us to what might be the most mind-bending aspect of this whole debate. We talked about the visual tension, but the sources reveal that the artist literally embedded this tension into the physical materials of the artwork. The medium isn't just carrying the message. The medium is the message.
We have to talk about the paper and the paint, because this isn't just a quick sketch on a notepad. Can you walk us through the actual technical specifications the sources gave us? Because they are wild.
Yeah, the physical materials are doing as much heavy lifting as the imagery itself. The artwork is a massive 22 by 15 inch sheet of Arches paper, but it's 640 gram cold pressed rough grain paper.
Okay, wait, I'm trying to picture that. Standard printer paper is what, maybe 80 grams? So 640 grams, is this basically cardboard?
It is incredibly heavy, it's thick, it's rigid, and because it is rough grain, it is highly textured. If you were to look at it closely, it's basically a landscape of tiny craters. It is a beast of a paper.
Wow.
And on top of this cratered landscape, Duke starts with a graphite drawing. But the sources note a fascinating dichotomy in how he draws.
What kind of dichotomy?
Well, when he's drawing the infrastructure, so the train cars, the rails, the graphite lines are incredibly firm. They are heavy, solid, almost architectural. They have mass and undeniable continuity.
Right.
But when he draws the human figures, the technique shifts completely. The lines become loose, fragmented, broken. They are just these small, fragile interruptions against the massive weight of the machine.
So I have to ask you, is that broken line work just the artist making a stylistic choice? Or is that heavy 640 gram paper texture actually dictating what the pencil can do? Because the way I'm visualizing it, it's like looking at a cold, rigid architectural blueprint, but it's been overlaid with this irregular, erratic heartbeat.
I love that. That analogy, the blueprint overlaid with an erratic heartbeat, is spot on for what is happening, both physically and metaphorically. It is not just a stylistic choice, it is physics.
Physics, okay.
Yeah, when the artist takes a brush and tries to paint those delicate human figures over that rough, cratered 640 gram paper, the brush does not glide. It physically breaks.
The brush is literally catching on the bumps of the paper.
Exactly. The texture creates physical friction, the stroke breaks apart over the rough terrain, and that broken stroke beautifully captures the extreme vibration, the adrenaline, the absolute fragility of the human body trying to survive on a machine that was never ever designed to hold human life.
So the physical friction of the paper represents the physical friction of survival. It's making the struggle tangible.
It does. And it goes even deeper when you look at the specific watercolors he used. The sources specify Daniel Smith watercolors. These aren't your standard, you know, grade school paints.
Right, right.
They are made with heavy mineral pigments, and they have a very high capacity for something called granulation.
Granulation. Okay, what does that actually mean when the paint hits the paper? I'm not a painter, so how does that change the image?
Think about standard watercolor. Usually the pigment dyes the water evenly, right? Mm-hmm. It creates a smooth, flat wash of color. But with heavily granulating paints, the pigments are literally tiny, heavy rocks.
Oh, wow.
They don't dissolve completely. Hmm. So as the water pools on the paper and begins to evaporate, those heavy mineral particles physically separate from the water. Gravity takes over, and they fall. They sink directly into those deep craters of the rough paper we were just talking about.
Wait, so the peen itself is literally breaking apart and settling into the cracks in real time?
Yes. The watercolor granulation is a physical act of separation and settling. It is chaotic. It is uncontrollable. And the sources argue that this perfectly symbolizes individual instability.
Mm-hmm.
It directly connects to the physical reality of these fragile, porous human bodies that are desperately trying not to dissolve against an inflexible iron machine. The pigment is struggling to hold itself together on the page, just like the people are struggling to hold themselves together on the train.
That is unbelievable. I mean, the literal chemistry of the paint is telling the story of survival. But survival on this journey isn't just about the physical friction, is it? I mean, it's not just about not falling off the iron. It's about what happens to your mind.
And this is where the structural critique and the psychological immersion really collide. The sources dive deep into the specific colors Duke chose, particularly in the foreground where the viewer is supposedly hanging out the train. He uses these cold blues and very earthy tones right in the immediate foreground, right where the physical danger is the highest.
Now, one argument in the debate is that these cold colors represent the institutional coldness of the macro system, right? Like the apathy of the machine itself.
Yes. But the opposing view, the one rooted in psychological immersion, argues something much darker, but much more vital. That cold blue isn't the machine being apathetic. That cold blue represents a psychological survival strategy for the migrant. It represents dissociation.
Dissociation, like mentally leaving your body.
Think about it. If you are traveling through incredibly dangerous corridors, clinging to the top of a moving train for days, you are facing extortion, violence, extreme weather, and the constant threat of death.
Yeah.
The sensory overload is unimaginable. If you internalize the absolute terror of the beast in real time, your mind will simply break. And if your mind breaks, your grip loosens and you fall.
You literally cannot afford to feel the fear.
You have to mentally anesthetize the trauma just to keep breathing. So that cold, distant blue in the foreground, it's not the metal of the train. It's the mind numbing itself to survive the present moment so the body can make it to the bright horizon in the background.
Wow. That completely shifts how I view the lack of melodrama in the painting. The coldness isn't a lack of empathy from the artist. It's the migrant's ultimate shield.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, this deeply intimate psychological trauma expands into a massive continental crisis.
Mm-hmm.
The sources emphasize that La Bestia isn't just an isolated painting. It's a central piece of Duke's larger book and art series called Trastio. And this series has a very specific temporal setting, the year 2026.
So this artwork is forecasting the near future, but what exactly happens in 2026 in this narrative?
It's a grim forecast. In the narrative of the Trastio series, 2026 marks a civilizational collapse. It's not just about standard political displacement anymore. The American dream, that bright horizon in the background of the painting, has completely lost its promise. The system can no longer sustain itself. The series envisions massive movements of uprooted, displaced communities who are now being forced to return to Latin America.
Wait, a return? So the journey on the beast isn't just heading north anymore. The flow is reversing.
The flow is reversing. It's a massive, chaotic unwinding of decades of migration. And this is where the title of the series, Trasteo, becomes so crucial.
What does that mean?
Trasteo in Spanish implies moving, transferring, or hauling your life and your belongings from one place to another. It's a heavy, burdensome word. The series suggests a future where a society that demanded cheap labor suddenly rejects the laborer entirely, forcing a continental hauling of human lives back across the very infrastructure that originally brought them there.
So what does this all mean? The structural tragedy of this broken macroeconomic system and the intimate individual trauma of the migrant. I mean, they are one and the same. The system collapses and millions of heartbeats are left erratic and vulnerable, making that terrifying journey all over again.
The macro and the micro are permanently fused.
Yeah.
You cannot separate the collapse of the system from the trauma of the individual clinging to the train.
That makes me wonder about the physical artwork itself, because there's a fascinating geographic irony to this painting that the sources brought up, connecting to this idea of Trastio.
The physical journey of the watercolor.
Right. This piece, La Bestia, was created in December 2024, and it was painted in the artist's studio in Whittier. And for you listening who might not know, Whittier is in Los Angeles County, California. It is the very heart of the migrant destination. It is the end of the line for the American dream.
the exact place the people on the train are desperately trying to reach.
Exactly. But then, in January of 2025, just a month later, this painting traveled to Palma, Spain for an exhibition. The physical artwork itself became a migrating object. It crossed oceans. It reflects the exact continental displacement and movement that it depicts on its surface.
The art itself is in transit. It becomes a physical participant in the concept of Trastia.
So as we pull all of these threads together, what is our ultimate takeaway from this debate? Is it a macro map of an economic system, or is it an intimate psychological dive into human trauma?
The synthesis of our sources suggests that the true brilliance of La Bestia is that it refuses to choose between the two. It achieves both. By suppressing the spectacle of blood and cheap melodrama, the painting offers profound, dignified respect to the people who are making this journey, those who have had to abandon it, and those who will face the massive returns forecasted for 2026.
It respects the viewer enough to not spoon-feed the horror, and it respects the subjects enough not to exploit their visible pain for shock value.
Right. It uses the heavy cratered paper, the granulating minerals, and the cold blues of dissociation to make you feel the friction of a broken system tearing at fragile human lives. It forces us to ask ourselves how we process information in our modern era of constant overload.
Yeah.
When we are faced with the suffering of others, do we retreat into those safe, cold, structural maps? Do we prefer the statistics because they don't ask anything of us? Or do we allow ourselves to step off the map, hang off the iron, and actually feel the physical friction of their reality?
And that brings up a really provocative thought for you, the listener, to mull over as you go about your day. We just spent all this time talking about the immense power of this artwork. We talked about how that power relies on the physical, brutal friction of 640-gram cratered paper. We talked about heavy, granulated mineral pigments literally breaking apart to convey human fragility. The physical medium is essential to the empathy the art creates. It requires texture. It requires friction.
Without the friction, the message doesn't physically manifest.
But think about how you will probably see this painting if you look it up later. Think about how we consume almost all images of human struggle today. We consume them digitally. We scroll past them on the perfectly smooth, frictionless, polished glass of our smartphone screens. So if the immense empathy of this art relies on physical friction and the literal breaking of the brush against the paper, what happens to our empathy when that friction is completely erased by our screens? Does our modern technology fundamentally re-anesthetize us to the very friction the artist was trying so desperately to make us feel?
It's a haunting question. Are we just putting ourselves right back into the position of looking at a map, completely safe behind the glass?
Definitely something to think about the next time you tap, scroll, and glide your finger over the surface of a tragedy. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the map, and we'll catch you next time.